There was a time, the story goes, that downtown Indianapolis was so desolate on weekends that well-intentioned civic groups would organize community shoots to scatter the pigeons that had taken over Monument Circle. My, how things have changed. The credit for that change almost certainly goes to a concerted effort spanning more than four decades to revitalize Indianapolis through sports. The strategy was ambitious and, we now know, successful. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this week's program, we'll examine the push in this year's legislative session to sustain that growth trend by expanding, yet again, the city's sports and convention infrastructure. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue researchers are at the top edge of computer technology, 3D design, using hand gestures, extending mobile battery life, leading through innovation and job creation. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.
During a college graduation speech in 1970, author Kurt Vonnegut offered a less than flattering recollection of the Indianapolis of his youth. It was, he said, the 500-mile speedway race and then 364 days of miniature golf and then the 500-mile speedway race again. Not anymore. These days, so much is going on downtown that a person would be hard-pressed to squeeze in even one round of par two putting, much less get waylaid by a triple bogey at the windmill or the clown's mouth. Lawmakers eager to extend the city's transformation are considering legislation to keep the Indiana Pacers here for at least another 25 years, to expand the Indiana Convention Center to accommodate bigger gatherings, to boost downtown hotel capacity, and maybe, just maybe, to help build a $150 million, 20,000-seat soccer stadium for the Indy 11. Now, some of the companies that built the local hospitality sector, however, warned that the plan could have serious unintended consequences. Joining me to discuss the issue are Republican Senator Jack Sandlin of Indianapolis, Democratic Representative Robin Shackelford of Indianapolis, Chris Gall, Senior Vice President of Marketing and Communications for Visit Indy, and Dave Sibley, Regional Vice President for White Lodging Services. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Glad to be
Chris,
here.
I got to start with you. You were in Honolulu at a marketing firm that was touting tourism for Honolulu. Was that just too tough that you felt you had to come here?
My dad was from Indiana, my mom from Honolulu, so I spent half my childhood there promoting Hawaii tourism.
You were doing it, okay.
And came back in 2005 because I saw the city's growth and we wanted to start a family. So, yeah, I've got Hawaiian.
So you got fired. They wanted you to talk about Diamond Head,
that's
and
right.
You were talking
that's
about
right.
The Monument
Hawaii
Circle.
Competes for tourism, too, by the way.
I've heard that. Are we still a sports mecca here
Absolutely.
In Indianapolis?
Absolutely. Sports is in our ethos. It's the foundation block of Indianapolis's brand, the state's brand, that goes all the way back to the Indy 500. And we've tracked over the last 40 years, we've hosted more than 500 international and national sporting events. So at the foundation block of who we are as Hoosiers is sports, and we can never forget that because that's built the brand, and with that has come tourism.
And certainly I think we'd all stipulate that helped build downtown, certainly, and the city as a whole. But now it's a mature industry to a large extent. Is it still as important to your constituents, would you say, Robin Shackelford? Is that, I mean, we're dealing with infrastructure issues, we're dealing with child welfare. We've got a lot of things on our plate. Is this front burner?
I think it is a top priority, but I think for my constituents, some of their top priorities are community development. So like you said, some of those social issue skills are issues. So they're looking at grocery stores in their areas, needs for parks, needs for training programs for kids. So those are more things that they see as a top priority. They do see jobs, so they want jobs. But they also want some of those living things that's in their communities. They want to see some of the economic and community development come back to the neighborhoods.
Of course, I'm sure will point out that I think the figure of downtown's population since sort of the sports initiative got underway was 20,000 plus individuals who, mm-hmm. I don't know where they were before, but they weren't downtown, presumably bringing with them the sorts of services and markets and dry cleaners and so forth that you're talking about. Maybe not to the extent that your constituents want to see, though. Mm-hmm. Jack Sandlin, is it easy to sell this to your constituents? It seems to be love and hate. You know, I remember watching the telethon to save the Pacers, and everybody sort of rallied around. It was everybody was doing this on a shoestring, and now, you know, people love the teams when they do well, but then when you start talking about money and public support and, you know, incentives to help fund these things, all of a sudden people say, why do these million dollar propositions need my tax dollars?
Well, we have a long history in Indianapolis of building and reinventing the Capital Improvement Board. If you go back to
and that's the group we should say that oversees.
Absolutely.
Lucas Oil Stadium, Bankers Life Arena, the ballpark where the Indians play, certainly Victory Field, and the Convention Center.
Unique initiative created by the legislature in the mid 60s. And let's step back to when Dick Lugar was the mayor. The ABA Pacers were playing at the Coliseum. And they were trying to merge into the NBA.
$4 ticket most times, but if I got good grades, we'd get $7 courtside.
NBA kept saying that, you don't have a permanent home to play. And so Dick Lugar, the Capital Improvement Board, a lot of other private investors stepped up, and we had Market Square Arena. And they turned dirt in 1971. I remember that, by the way. And so when they started building the arena, that became the home of the Pacers. And then a couple of years after that, the NBA, who said they'd never have a small market team, merged into the Pacers merged into the NBA. So as we go forward through history and look at building the Convention Center, and the Hoosier Dome, before we had the football team, measured risk is what I call it. And the legislators, local leaders, have always been willing to take those measured risks. And I see this as just another measured risk proposal in the bill, specifically where it deals with the soccer stadium.
You just want to get right into the nitty gritty. All right, I'm still exchanging hellos here, but all right.
Well, hello, but it's a series of permissions, if you will. It takes certain approvals by the City County Council, by the Capital Improvement Board, certainly the Major League Soccer initiatives on the table. But I think that I look at the current bill and I divide it into three pieces. I see the Pacers, I see the expansion of the Convention Center, and I see the soccer.
Well, we're going to talk about all three of those, I promise you. I don't want anybody to feel left out here at the table, especially somebody who may have a minority of view on some of the aspects of this proposal. And by the way, you left out Elvis's last concert as the real linchpin of Market Square Arena. Dave Sibley, first of all, White Lodging Services, name of the company. But to people in this area, they might be more familiar with a lot of the very high-profile establishments that you manage. Tell us a few. JW Marriott.
The JW Marriott, the Indianapolis Marriott downtown, the Courtyard, Spring Hill, and Fairfield in Indy downtown. So we have 2,276 rooms downtown. So we're very interested in a vibrant downtown. And as we talk about this, we're going to be supportive, but we want to do it the right way.
And I want to get into that. Generally, though, how important are pro sports franchises? You have a lot of franchises, or you manage a lot of properties across the country. Some of those markets have very active professional sports environments or college sports environments. Some don't.
Right.
Is there an appreciable difference in your line of work?
Listen, we think Visit Indy, the Sports Corp, they do a great job. We think Pacers are important, the Colts are important. We think Big Ten's important. There's lots of sports.
Indians are going to be getting
Indians.
Be getting
I don't want to leave anybody out. They're all important. And we aren't against soccer and Indy 11. We just want to make sure that it's done the right way. And this will be the first time ever that where you have a 1,414-room hotel coming on with no meeting space. It's never been done, that we can tell, across the country in 40 years. We think it'll be oversupply, which then is going to lead. I did some quick math. I think both reports say there's going to be at least 6% loss in occupancy. For our five hotels, that'll mean hundreds of layoffs, and it'll mean about $5 million in lost wages.
And we should back up, since you guys all obviously want to talk about the bill, so we'll jump right into it. But clearly, it is a three-part bill. It would be funding for the extension of the Pacers lease, basically, for 25 years. CIB would have additional money to work with some of its facilities. Certainly, the expansion of the Convention Center. And that, Dave Sibley, is what you're talking about, where the hotels come in, because part of that expansion would be these two very high-profile hotels, including one that, at least on paper, is 38 floors.
We're not against the expansion of the 80,000 square feet that the convention center wants to do. What we're worried about and concerned about is the oversupply of 1,414 rooms that will not be able to take care of itself. Chris will do a great job of putting in the 30% of group that they do with the JW and so forth, but that still leaves 177,000 group room nights to fill, and they don't have any space.
So you're more, I mean, is this about, maybe we mislabeled the show. It's not, is it about sports or is it about convention business? Because they're not necessarily synonymous. You know, I guess different aspects of the bill certainly deal with different parts. But let's, since you go on to talk about the hotels.
Sure.
That's more to do with conventions. Maybe help pro sports help get them here in the first place and maybe made some meeting planners familiar with the city. But do the sports really have anything to do with
this? Yeah, I just say that this is really a collaborative effort. I mean, as a legislator, you know, I have to depend on Chris's information. I have to depend on information from the hotel industry. You know, in my district downtown, I represent all the sports venues, the Capital Improvement Board, and most of the major hotels downtown. So it's important. You know, I heard Chris recently talk about the 81,000, you know, employees, you know, that are part of the convention business downtown. And, you know, we need to not only protect that, but to see if we can also improve that and provide opportunities.
Well, you talk about employment, and Robin Shackelford, that gets back to something you alluded to with your constituents, jobs, additional infrastructure, markets, more vibrant community. Do the number of jobs, is that enough of a carrot, or do you sympathize with the argument that some of the existing hotel operators that have been here in some cases for, what, decades, may, if we buy into those sets of numbers, and we can talk about the two competing studies here, they'll take it on the chin, and your constituents arguably as well.
Well, I've got a follow-up question because I do want some clarification on some of your concerns. But I think for my community, they look at the 19,000 plus jobs that's going to come in because of this project. For them, they would look at it as, okay, they would assume that economic development coming in and they would appreciate those jobs. But for them, they see taxpayers and the community wanting to be a partner. So as we look at this legislation and look at economic development, not only they want to see community development also, they want to see the taxpayers be community partners in these contracts. So as we're looking at the contracts, as we're looking at the businesses, how can we also put community development in there? So when I sat down and talked to the mayor's office, I said, as you're looking through this, we want to see how can the community be involved, make sure that we're looking at community development along with economic development, along with the jobs. So the jobs just aren't enough, but we need to see how can we get some community development in this package also. So when Atlanta Hawks did their package, they made the Atlanta Hawks do an MBE-WBE enterprise plan that had a 31% enterprise plan package in there. So just thinking outside the box.
And this would be, I think there are caps, but anything over certain levels or thresholds in terms of this projects would be open for, put out for bid, is that right?
Correct.
And I'm not sure if there are certain incentive programs or
We have our state goals in there for MBE-WBE, but they went above and beyond that and said the company actually had to set up a plan and had
these are minority-owned businesses for people who may not be familiar with the
minority-owned businesses.
Or
they have
the
plan
acronym.
Set up.
I would say the Capital Improvement Board mirrors the state's requirements, and so any new development, hotel or convention center otherwise, and anything the Capital Improvement Board does follows the state's policy, and that's very important. I think the jobs, we look back to 2010, prior to the JW Marriott opening, the city had 66,000 people employed in tourism. We're very proud that there's a record-setting 81,600 men and women who depend on tourism for a paycheck. As we look into the future, by 2025, our city, Central Indiana, will need nearly 100,000 workers. We've got strategic partnerships with Ivy Tech, IUPUI in tourism, and their schools, all the local institutions and universities here within Indianapolis. And we concentrate on workforce development with the chamber and the state chamber to make sure that we're feeding the pipeline for the hospitality industry. Right now you wouldn't have enough. I mean, that's another potential problem. You couldn't staff these hotels that you're talking about building, right?
I think that's an arguable point. We know that sometimes there are jobs that people do not want to take in hospitality. Then there are other jobs where someone will start as a valet and go to a manager and then be a senior manager and move up the chain, if you will. And our industry in tourism is an industry that doesn't necessarily need a 4-year degree with upward mobility, and we're very proud of the wages that you can earn in tourism and hospitality as a whole. So jobs are important, and we see tourism as an economic development strategy to grow not only the CIB-owned and operated facilities and hotels, but also quality of life, because with tourism comes other development.
So I want to give an example of community development.
I feel bad for Dave over here. We're going to get him in here at some point, but go ahead, Representative.
So an example, since we're going to be taking some of those property taxes and coming up with a new TIF for this area, so you have some of those property taxes being taken. So community people are thinking, okay, that takes away taxes that would have been given to schools or given to other programs out there in the community. So schools, their CTE programs, career training programs have been cut, which a lot of the hospitality training programs have been cut because we're not seeing them as those high demand type jobs. So one of those community type programs could be you would have the company say, okay, we're going to invest, go out and train in hospitality, have that in our legislation, our contract, and say a portion of this didn't have to go into some of those CTE programs in high schools.
We just morphed into a committee meeting hearing at some point.
Something like that in the package, where you're still thinking about hospitality and sports in this project.
Dave, I wonder, a lot of these things are just, you're seeing a conversation take place here at the table. One of your complaints, and that of other hospitality industry representatives, your peers, you say that these conversations that are taking place now should have been taking place a year or more ago when some of the planning. Were you left out, or is that the main beef here? Is capacity and lack of a potential threat to your occupancy rates the concern, or do you feel that other hospitality companies are getting somehow a better shake or a better deal?
No. We want to solve all the problems and be part of the solution. I think where the hotel industry and the owners felt that they weren't involved in the process, yes, they got a bid process and to show interest. And at that time, they said they were looking for an 800-room hotel. They'd be willing to take 600 rooms with the appropriate space. They met in January with the CIB, the people that were interested. At that time, they felt the way it was presented to them, and this is their opinion, that they were told that there wouldn't be much subsidies to this project. And when they left, they felt that it really would never get done because without it, they know the financing would not work. When it was announced in October, and all of a sudden it was 1,414 rooms, which is way bigger than what they originally talked about, and that they were putting no space in there, only the convention center was building space. They're like, this is going to be a disaster for downtown. Let's take a deep breath, stop, bring us to the table, and let's work on all these solutions together. Not to say that we don't want solutions. We have to have them.
And when you say they don't, the point about not having their own meeting space is that that's a suggestion that they're going after the business traveler as opposed to other conventioners?
There's two things with that. The business traveler, they're saying they're going to have 20% of their business will be business traveler. The JW is only 6%. That's 72,000 room nights that they're saying they're going to go out and get. And the only way they can get that is not a market that's expanding. They're going to take it from all the other hotels downtown, and they can't get 72,000. If you take our five hotels, which is 2,276 rooms, much bigger than them. We only had 48,000 business travel room nights last year. So they can't do it. And then the second part is Chris will fill them with his part of the obligation with the group room nights. That leaves them 177,000 with no space. It's a disaster waiting to happen.
Now, I heard they were going to have convention space. Would that change the paradigm? At the hotel.
So it's interesting because there's only two things where Dave and I have ever conflicted. The first is when the Colts play the Eagles, as he's an Eagles fan before a Colts fan. The second
he's
is on
South Philly. What would you
on
want
this topic,
to do, right?
And the Eagles usually beat the Colts. In this case, we hope that we'll win out. It's very important to remember that over a 2.5-year period, Visit India, a nonprofit that's been around since 1923, started hearing from convention customers who said, we're literally outgrowing Indianapolis. We took a timeout. We did a study by HVS, who has done more than 6,000 of these. They talked to hotel general managers and some of our customers, and they came back and they said, yeah, 800 rooms, and you need a 60,000-square-foot ballroom. To Dave's point, when the CIB announced that Kite Realty and Pan Am Plaza would be in, they said, oh, wait a second, it's going to be 1,400 rooms. We shared in that anxiety, called another timeout, and said, let's go back with HVS, a company that Y Lodging and others have used throughout their duration of studying markets, and said, let's make sure we've done our homework. And they came back and said, based on the pipeline, based on all the rooms that they the Pan Am Plaza project is putting in line, which is 814 and then 600, with the 80,000 square feet of space that's currently being offered, it makes sense, so much that if the other two hotels need to build individual meeting space. And Dave has a very good point that without these two hotels having individualized meeting space, that room to meeting space ratio is a bit off. And so we feel confident, based on the study, but also based on talking with Hilton and Kite Realty, that they have assured us that each of those hotels will have up to 30,000 square feet of meeting space.
And Hilton would be the brand on both. Hilton. Well, it'd be a new brand. Signia, I believe, is the first, would be the debut of a Hilton brand. I mean, so we hear it's a disaster. We hear it's a necessity. We have numbers on both sides sort of competing. One thing I hear lawmakers hate, I hear it all the time, we don't pick winners and losers. Do you feel as if you're being forced to pick winners and losers?
Well, I think that as you go through the legislative process that, you know, you need to get information so that you're making right decisions. Legislators shouldn't pick winners and losers. They need to make right decisions and give opportunities. And that's where this bill's headed. You know, I think the House Ways and Means Committee, the Senate Appropriations Committee, I mean, we've got some really great, thoughtful people, and this isn't a finished product at this point, and I think we'll continue to collect information and evaluate.
So this, I mean, this is, could the numbers just, is it a matter really of numbers? You were at a certain number of rooms, and it's 1,400. If it's somehow in the middle, do we get everybody happy? And, I mean, it's not as if this thing, you know, barely eked out of the Senate. It was, what, 48 to 1?
48 to 1.
And the person who voted against it, Mike Young, had other issues, other reasons. So it's not, I mean, is that, would that be satisfactory, just an adjustment of the room count?
I think, I don't want to speak for all owners, but I think if they were brought to the table, they'd be willing to work to find the right solution.
And you think that's workable?
I think that'll be workable. We actually don't put in the bill. We don't get that detailed in the bill, talking about room numbers and that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, we try to stay at a higher level. So I think we will leave it up to the companies and the mayor's office to get down in the details and that grittiness. And I think, yeah, all the hotel owners, existing and new, should come to the table and talk about those kind of details. As lawmakers, we don't want to get into that business and get that detailed into their business.
Sure.
But we'll keep it high level at the regulatory.
Those bills will be even longer than they are if you start. So if there's compromise there and the Pacers stick around another 25 years and the convention center expansion takes place, are you going to get your stadium? In fact, we should point out that the bill, you initially introduced a bill that dealt only with what was described as a TIF, basically a special taxing district, where everything, all of the tax revenue from that would basically, and everybody points out there's no new taxes, or higher taxes. It's just,
that's an important note.
I know, that's why I thought you would have made it, but that's why it's simply a matter of, as Representative Shackelford said, the money going instead of schools and libraries, it goes to these causes. Are you going to get your stadium, your soccer stadium?
You know, I think that we're on the right course to do that. There's never been a proposal that's equal to what's in this legislation. So if you take a 200-acre tract somewhere in the downtown area that has no productive tax base on it right now,
and which means there's one place that you're talking about. So I think that's southwest of the current Lucas Oil Stadium.
I would advocate for southwest. I mean, you've got the Ambrose development on the west side of the river. You know, if you put a similar development on the east side of the river, think about in the future, I mean, could we possibly have a riverfront downtown? There's an initiative to clean up White River, you know, from the county line road south up through Hamilton County. I mean, I think you have to be futuristic and look ahead. But if you build up,
we're going to have to leave it there. I know I ask you your favorite topic, and we get you riled up here. Thank you all. I wish I could extend our checkout time, but I don't know the right people, and I'm getting a signal that we're out of time. Time does fly. I appreciate the discussion. Lots to be worked out here, but I think we all have a better understanding of what's at stake. Again, my guests have been Republican Senator Jack Sandlin of Indianapolis, Democratic Representative Robin Shackelford of Indianapolis, Chris Gall of Visit Indy, and Dave Sibley of White Lodging Services. Gerrymandering has been around since the 18th century. Is this a year for serious reform? Reminder, we are going into an election year on the next Indiana Lawmakers. Time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hannah News Service. Ed, lots to unpack here. This is really a three-headed bill. It's the PACER bill. Some call it, it's the Convention Center Hotel bill. Others call it, some say it's the Indy 11 Stadium bill. Which is it? Is it all or none? Make sense of this for us.
There's a lot in there, John. The soccer stadium now has almost proven to be a little bit extraneous because they want some time. They want the authority to do things. And it seems like legislators are saying, all right, well, we'll give you a little bit of time, and you're not really part of this, but we'll help you along.
Because initially it was going to be used as a carrot for the MLS to get a franchise, but now that has to come first,
right,
at least under the current language.
And that's not going to happen. I think you heard in the Ways and Means Committee hearing that's really not a realistic thing, at least in the short term.
So let's put that off the table, or at least to the back burner.
The big fight right now is over the convention center space and the hotels. The subsidy for the two new hotels at Pan Am Plaza, or the one big hotel, whatever you want to call that. And as you heard a little bit from Dave Sibley and some from Jack Sandlin as well, you know, there's a little bit of controversy over just how much involvement the hoteliers had early in the process, whether they were really brought in, what they were led to believe the project would be. And then there's also a little bit of controversy over whether the number of rooms in the hotels that they're proposing is going to be appropriate for the convention space. Some of the hotel people say that for the number of rooms that are being added, you need a whole bunch more convention space. We thought we had the big build-out, but there may need to even be more. Then there's also a question being raised by some sectors, and we heard a lot about this from legislators in the Ways and Means Committee hearing, about whether there's adequate mass transit, public transportation, or even options for potential workers and to bring people downtown for an expanded convention center and all these new events.
So does something happen this year? I mean, this seems to be on rails, or it was, before this controversy came up. Do we just see a compromise? As I mentioned, numbers are somewhere closer to the middle?
Absolutely. It's going to end up being a collaborative process. I think the two sides are going to get together, lock themselves in one of the nice new hotel rooms or in a convention center ballroom, and come up with a compromise that legislators will say, okay, if you're happy, we're happy.
Very good. We'll leave it there. Ed, as always, appreciate your insight. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Chwanis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, and my colleague Ed Feigenbaum, thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House coverage. Until next week, take care.
What if a robotic arm could help disabled students reach for their dreams? It does. Introducing RoboDesk. To learn more about this and more than 400 other world-changing Purdue technologies, visit otc-prf.org.